Hi, I'm Paul Camillos from Shooting the Breeze podcast. Join the STB crew for conversations and stories around women's hoops and women in hoops, inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends behind the scenes. It's our seventh season. Drop us a like and review, and make sure to subscribe for early access and other bonus content. As we wrap a huge 2024 for Shooting the Breeze, we wanted to showcase some of our more innovative pods, as well as some of the new voices that were part of last year's Series 6. It's our mixtape, covering live pods like the roaming mic at Qdos Bank Arena with takes from Hoops fans and the WNBL Awards live from the orange carpet. It also highlights Jazz Shelley, Davidson College Wildcats assistant coach James Jansen, and the Gliders Sarah Houston. Make sure to subscribe to our new membership, the Friends of STB. It's a free tier of membership, and we've got more information detailed on our socials. Our first member exclusive podcast is coming soon with Tauihi New Zealand champion Lara McSpadden.
We've got a lot of talented professional photographers on site too. Oh, hello, Jordan Canada. Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. We are a podcast that promotes women's basketball. My name's Jacinta. This is Paul. And thanks for joining us. We're just doing a live stream of the, like, on the orange carpet. We're living our e-channel fantasy. Yeah. First of all, how are you? You've just come back from Canberra after a stunning one-point win over the UC Caps.
I'm feeling good. You know, we made playoffs, so, you know, very thankful for that. And, you know, just happy to be here tonight.
Yeah, and we're very happy for you to, like, be in the league and also be here, because you were one of the most exciting signings coming into this season. People were throwing their phones in excitement that you were coming. So has it been everything that you expected?
It's been everything and more. I've really enjoyed my time here in Australia. And, you know, my team has been very welcoming and, you know, greeted me with open arms. So I'm very thankful to be a part of the Boomers organization, but also just the competitiveness of every team that I've played against this season. Every game we've had a battle, and, you know, that's the kind of competition I'm looking for. And to be a part of a league that, you know, is day in and day out, you're always going to get a game. So it's been really great this season.
So you're coming up to the finals. You're up against Southside. What's your biggest concern about Southside?
You know, I don't really have a concern, but I think, you know, obviously they're very tall. They got a lot of height and a lot of experience. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing. But, you know, we've played against them three times this season. So, you know, we're going to know a lot of their stuff, and they're going to know a lot of our stuff. But I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to who wants it more. And, you know, the city of Melbourne playing, the two rival teams playing in playoffs, I think it's going to be a great atmosphere for our fans. So I'm really excited about it.
It's going to be an awesome series.
When was the last time that you perhaps played in a final series with two rival teams in the situation you find yourself in with Boomers and Flyers?
I have not played in a playoff atmosphere of rivalry since, I don't even know if Seattle Storm and Phoenix Mercury were rivals at the time for my rookie season in the W, but I don't think I've ever been a part of a rivalry in a playoff series, so this is kind of my first time doing that, and I'm pretty excited. Like I said, I think it's going to be a great atmosphere for the city of Melbourne, so I'm excited.
Maybe from an Aussie standpoint, if it's Phoenix Mercury and Seattle Storm, depending on how many Aussies were on each team at that time, that could probably close to be a rivalry too. And now we won't keep you because we want you to go and enjoy the night, and hopefully it's a better. And also congratulations for your nominations for MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. Expected, excited, surprised. How did you feel when it was announced?
I was very excited, very happy that, you know, people have considered me to be a part of the MVP list and also Defensive Player of the Year. It's an amazing accomplishment, and, you know, all the nominees that are part of those categories are phenomenal as well. So whoever wins it, you know, they definitely deserve it, but I'm just very thankful to be a part of that conversation.
And then final question, very important. If it was a 100-meter race between you, Aerie, and Jade Melbourne, who's winning that 100-meter race?
I don't know. We're all pretty fast. I'm going to bet on myself, so I'm going to say me, but I think it'll be very, very close.
It took us a while for our eyes to adjust because the three of you, particularly yourself and Aria, so quick, we were like, okay, wow, we're going to have to find a way to keep up because, yeah, it was really exciting to watch you in our league. Thank you for coming to be a part of the league. You were the best person, like being able to create a scoring situation, but also finishing and absorbing contact. One of the best players I've seen to be able to do that. So loved having you in the WNBL, and please come back, Jordan Canada.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time as well. Thanks. Go and enjoy the night.
Have a great time. Thanks.
Best of luck for the awards too. We're rolling on to our next guest, Paul. Over to you. Yeah.
So it's only a very tight game with 1 point differential. How are you finding it so far?
It was pretty awesome. It's close. I think we might be a chance for OT. But it's pretty tight. So see what happens.
What do you think is the key for both teams if they want to get across the finish line?
Les Nicholson's been killing it for Sydney, so she can keep it up. And Taylor's just been dropping some great shots. So if those big hitters for Sydney can keep it up, then they might get across the line. And DD's been in form. She jumps into it. So hopefully Sydney can just get across the line, but you never know. It's very close. So who knows? Lauren might come on and have a fairy tale game-winning shot or something. You wouldn't put it past her.
And so this is Kayla George's 350th game. So you're saying history. They also almost just come back from Brazil. They qualified. What does it mean from your perspective for women's basketball to have this in front of people?
It's massive. Yeah, it's absolutely awesome. I got the notification from Hoops Capital saying there was 9,000 tickets sold today. So I'm not sure if everyone showed up, but it's great to see. Good atmosphere. Having two legends like Caleb hitting the 350 mark. Possibly AJ's last professional game in Sydney. You never know with her. But it's great. And then I was just sitting down there in front of some young boys, and they were talking about the game and cheering on the players, knew everybody's name, just stuff that just really highlighted to me how much the women's game has grown in this country and in general. It's absolutely awesome to see everyone here getting around it.
So you're on the camera most of the time, but is there a WNBL game this season so far that has stuck out, and why?
This is pretty awesome in terms of crowd, but I would say it was also really great to come to the Pink Hoops round. Obviously double header, so pretty good crowd for both Kings and Flames, but that was a special round, obviously, for a few people with Tiana and Jordy and people just around the organization. But I'd say probably going to go with the Pink Hoops round here at Kudos, because that was a pretty special day.
And lastly, do you have a favorite WNBL player?
Oh, man, it's hard. I mean, I grew up watching Lauren predominantly. I'm 30, so she was kind of always killing it when I was growing up. But I love Kayla, love Loz Nicholson. She's not in WNBL at the moment, but Alana Smith is great. Who else? There's a lot. Oh, Rebecca Cole, of course. Beck Allen, for sure. But yeah, no, we've got some great ballers, and it's good to see them over in the qualifiers too.
If you're going to give anybody who's considering going to college that one piece of advice that you think is like the thing that you wish you were told before you went, what would it be?
I would just say that like any sort of change is good, even if it doesn't work out for you and it's not the right fit. You learn so much from that experience, and then you then become grateful for things that you might not have gotten or don't get now. Or I think that you can always come over here and try it. And if you don't like it, that's okay. But I think just knowing that you have tried it and given it a shot and experienced something different or challenged yourself, just knowing that, I think it's a good thing. Obviously, half my team, like going through Australia stuff, half would go to college and half would go to the WNBL. Like, obviously, I think about what would happen if I went straight to the WNBL as well. But for me, like, I'm here now. So I think it's pretty cool to say that I've had both experiences and I'm being able to bring the knowledge I have from that experience as well.
You've also experienced the WNBA. So what was that leap from college to the WNBA like for you? Because it is obviously different. Was it what you were expecting? And how did you react to all those changes?
Yeah, I would say I'd watched enough WNBA to know kind of what I was getting myself into. I wasn't really sure what the structure would look like, what camps would look like, all that sort of little stuff. But the game itself, it's definitely a lot more physical than anything I've ever experienced. I would say a lot more one-on-one style of play. Yeah, that was a little bit, because it is professional, that was the difference I felt from college, is just because it's more like your individual talent can get you places. But then for a rookie or someone like me to get into the team, like, you need to be an expert at your role because you have so many incredibly talented individual players that if you wanted to make a team like that, you had to be exceptional at what you do best.
Is there a lot more, I guess, focus on isolation and one-on-one opportunities when you're at a WNBA training camp versus when you're at college? It's very focused on team concepts. Was there much similarities and differences in that kind of mindset going into it?
Yes and no. I feel like just it's more individually based in the WNBA just because the individuals are so incredible. Like, I think that's why it's more of an individual, not necessarily individual game, but it's like your individuals shine because they are the best in the world.
And you're lucky that you had a couple of other Aussies at that Phoenix training camp when you got drafted. But also, we should say at the top, congratulations for getting drafted as well, because that's certainly a great notch in the belt of your career to have your name called out on draft day is incredible. There are a couple of us actually online when leading up to the WNBA draft, we were trying to pick, you know, what Aussies are going to get picked. And a few of us were like, don't count out Jai Shelley. Like, he's surely got to go in the round there somewhere. But you had Amy Atwell and Beck Allen with you at that Phoenix training camp. So hopefully that was a little bit comforting given that you made the big jump from college to WNBA.
Yeah. I mean, it was really cool to have both of them. And I hadn't met either of them before, but it's just because we're Aussies, it was just so easy to connect and feel at home. And honestly, a training camp, all the preseason games, every experience that I had there was nothing short of incredible. Like, all the girls were amazing. Beck was awesome. It was really cool to be able to connect with her. But it was just a really cool experience that I feel like I've learned so much from, and just grateful to have had that opportunity. I mean, everyone dreams of being able to go to a WNBA camp or being drafted. And I can say I've done that now. Obviously, I still got some work to do if I want to get back into the WNBA and have another chance at a training camp. But just having that under my belt, I think it's pretty special to say I've done that.
What was the run-up to the draft and the draft itself like as an experience? Because, you know, from here, we hear stories about what goes on, and you know, obviously you get to see the results of the draft, but you were there and you were like, in it. What was it like and what happens?
I think that was the scariest part, is I didn't really know how it would all work as well. And I have a pretty good agent that was pretty transparent and trying to talk me through everything that would happen. He gave me the option that night if I wanted to know about 15 minutes before where I was going, or did I want it to be a surprise on the telly with the rest of my teammates. And I went back and forth and I was like, I just want to know, because it's this whole 2 weeks since college finished had stressed me out and I just want to know what's happening. And then I decided, like, I'll let it be a surprise, because he was kind of reassuring me that my name would get called, because that was obviously something that was a bit stressful.
So we've already mentioned a couple of our Aussies already. You've got Izzy Morgan. You've also got Katie Donovan, Millie Pryor, you mentioned.
Yep.
Rosie Deegan and Charlize. And so getting into like the idea of how you go about recruiting and what you look for when you recruit new athletes to your team, I think before we have once spoken before where you've attended an under 17 and an under 19 World Cup. Is that right? Is that you that I've spoken to while you've been traveling around?
So I've typically kind of attended some stuff in Australia, usually Australian National Junior Championships. And then last year I went to the, was it last year? Well, I guess 22, so 2 years ago now, I went to the under 17 World Cup in Hungary. So that'll usually be a typical fashion, whether it's every year to go to one of those kind of events and year to year, depending on what's going on with the Australian space, trying to get down there is definitely a priority as well. COVID obviously got in the way of that for a little bit of that stretch in the past kind of 5 years or so, but now we're out of that. That's been my model.
And when you go to those international tournaments, does it make recruiting a little bit more difficult given the different styles of play across different international teams and systems? Or have you got a pretty good idea of what you're looking for?
I think with recruiting, right, and with any form of scouting or projecting of talent, I think it's always beneficial to be able to watch players play against the best opponents they can, right? And sometimes you're having to forecast way further in the future, and you look at maybe an NBA team trying to do that and forecast kind of a really different level of play, and that becomes really hard, right? That's why you get so many misses in that level of scouting. And I think what we have an ability to do when we recruit internationally is potentially observe and evaluate players playing a level of basketball that's more similar to what our level is, right? If you compare that to what it might be like watching a high school kid down the road, well, the distance we have to project is way further. And so I do think that there is not that much different. Like when we talk about diversity of style of play, there's way more diversity of style of play within the college system than there would be between countries at an international event. And I'll put one small asterisk to that, and that would be that probably going to the Asia Cup is not the best strategy for me, right? In terms of watching Australia go against Japan and Korea and these teams that maybe top out at a kid that's 5'7", 5'8", and where it's just, quite frankly, is a completely different style of basketball. But at a world event, at a European event, I think that the level is pretty comparable, or at least stylistically, like we can see a lot of things that would be helpful. And I do think one component of evaluating, though, is that usually what you see is correct, right? So if someone performs really well, you like them, they're probably going to translate. It's probably going to be good. It's rare that it doesn't. But just because someone is not playing well at that level doesn't mean that they won't translate, I think is the other part. There might be a variety of different reasons. It may be opportunity, right? You think about someone like Izzy Morgan, who was probably in the last one or two picked on that under 19 team and didn't really get much court time at that under 19 National World Cup. Well, she showed up here and played every game as a freshman and was arguably the best freshman in our conference. And once again, she had opportunity. They were slightly different style or whatnot, but I think that's an important component when evaluating kids is to understand what you're not seeing, right? And what the potential may be for a kid like that.
So I just want to go back to something we touched on before. You know, you've got a lot of travel coming up. You've got 7 games, 3 at home and 4 away. When you're getting down at this end of the season, do you find that the travel is a little bit harder on the team and the travel schedule because it's you're getting down to that back end and there's post-regular season coming up as well?
Yeah, I think we always talk about, obviously, there's March Madness, right? And that's kind of the goal is to kind of play through to the point you're playing in that NCAA tournament, playing in March Madness. But the hardest time of the year to be a college basketball player is February. And some of that is, yeah, like you've got schools back started up after a winter break. And yeah, you're at the pointy end of the season. You're banged up. Maybe you're playing with limited numbers. Like right now, we're only dressing 8 players, right? So the bench is a little thin with those injuries that we've had now. And so, yeah, I think all those things add up. And one of the goals is to kind of weather that storm. And I think the reality is, well, everyone's going through it, right? Just because you're we're traveling 4 of those games. Well, everyone else is probably traveling somewhere between 3 or 4 of them as well. And they're going through it too. So I think it's just about being able to generate some mental rest for yourself too. And really at this time of year, it just the habits are important, right? The habits of looking after your body and going and seeing the athletic trainer and whether it's an ice bath here and there or just looking after your soft tissues or eating well. Hydrating, sleeping, all of those things are magnified at this time of year.
You know, there needs to be more backing. I think if I was paid a minimum wage, there's athletes out there that are absolutely incredible and they're getting paid an astounding amount of money, and they bloody deserve it. But a minimum wage to focus for the time that you are an athlete, and, you know, there's got to be standards. There's got to be requirements. You can't just willy-nilly get given it. You need to meet every expectation, as we do with our scholarships as well. They're not just given. You need to upkeep every part of that. But with the sport, there already comes opportunities. So there's opportunities to go out and speak to people about it and to speak about people with disabilities in sport and speak about the Paralympics and all these different components that would only draw more attention to our sport in general and other sports in general. So for us to be able to do those, we then need to take time off work to be able to go and share what it is that we love about it. And I can tell you right now that I'd love to go and be a part of that instead and to, you know, to grow not only, I guess, my platform as a speaker and as someone with lived experience, and it might be with childhood illness, it might be with mental health, it might be the fact that all these different things have compounded and come together in sport and how that's been super beneficial for me. But in order to do that, you either offer up your time and do it for the love of doing it, which a lot of us do. But if that was, you know, solely a job or a contract or something like that, I just see the progression of this sport in particular and a lot of other para sports as well plummeting. You know, we want to draw more attention to this, and we want to grow the nation and the developing players. And I think that can only happen with a lot more people doing the work, I suppose.
I often wonder, and I mean, look, this is just kind of like a blue sky kind of thing. Why is it that industry doesn't necessarily pay attention to wheelchair sports or disabled sports?
When you say industry?
Well, when I say industry, I mean business. I mean a company that would ordinarily go and sponsor,
yeah,
you know, an able-bodied sport isn't necessarily looking to sponsor a disabled sport.
I had a chat with a lady at a Women in Sport event recently, and I'm kicking myself because I've forgotten her name, but she works for Basketball Australia, and she basically spoke about that. She said, what is it that you need? And I mentioned the same thing, but also something that I've mentioned constantly, and this is what I find really special about the disabled community in general, is we've all had something to do with very big organisations in one way or another. It might be Spina Bifida Foundation, it might be Kids Cancer Support Group, Telethon. Within all of these things, especially in WA, I've had the opportunity to work alongside West Coast Eagles, Fremantle Dockers, BHP Billiton, and the list absolutely goes on. So I'm only one person, and, you know, the hunger that I have to be able to reach out to these massive industries and these, you know, these big head honchos and, one, showcase what we do, and two, ask for a bit of help. You know, I working at the bank that time ago, I knew that they were sponsoring a Paralympian, and that's fantastic. There is a section in a lot of big industries where they sort of have that funding. However, again, it comes to the groundwork, and I think that the drive and the capacity that we could have as athletes to be able to go and do these things as our own sort of unit could only advance if there was that sort of, I don't know, maybe contractual side of things where we're going out, we're doing the work. And, you know, I'm stoked to be able to do that as a volunteer side of things. And we're getting there slowly, you know, even in the last like 5 years, the changes that I'm seeing around accessibility and inclusion or diversity and culture and race and sex and everything like that, we're starting to talk more, and it's fabulous. But I think that, like speaking to this lovely lady, I think that there needs to be a brainstorm from people that have played past and previous, and the things that we've noticed happen already, but what is it that we actually want? And I guess how could we potentially achieve it? But it comes from groundwork and athletes putting in the hard yards, and again, us showcasing what it is that we're doing. And I think the fact that there's things like this, like podcasts, and there's far more media exposure now, and showing people just how raw and brutal the sports can be and what it is that we put into this, it's definitely growing. I think it's growing at a turtle pace at the moment, and I think that There's definitely more that's going and going to and can be done. It's just, I guess, speaking to the right people and coming down to the athlete level and finding out, I guess, what the hardship parts are and what we're doing well at, but what we could be doing better at, and maybe going from there.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.